Hey everybody, if it's Tuesday, it must be Tuesdays with Dave. How's everybody doing this afternoon? I apologize for the delay. I was actually watching the parade, Patriots parade, streaming through Boston, past my old residence, past my old home on Tremont Street. And what a game, huh? What a great game that was. Most of the people at my house left at halftime. Fairweather fans. They came for the food, I think. And I was home alone, and I actually started doing some work after that guy caught the ball. I forget who it was on the sideline there. And I thought, ah, you know, after we kicked that the field goal. So I started doing some work. I kept the TV on. I got involved in the work. I kept looking up, and all of a sudden I looked up, and it was 28-20. I was like, oh my God, what happened? I missed a touchdown. So then I saw how much time was left, and I thought, oh, there's enough time left to win this game. And then when Edelman caught that ball, I knew we were going to win. My heart started pounding. You know, there's still a few minutes left, but my heart started pounding, and I knew. How did I know? Because it was two of those, you know, weird, crazy catches that beat us when we played the Giants. Each time there was this catch, you know, this unbelievable catch. And we made the unbelievable catch this time, and I knew. So it was a good thing. I was sitting in my living room all by myself, letting out a big ow. Fireworks started going off in the neighborhood. But it was a good thing. I know if you're a Patriots fan, you're a hater. That's okay. We still love you anyways. But you got to admit, Brady's the GOAT. Patriots are the best. They don't have to cheat to win. And it's over. All right. So that being said, let's get to work. Haven't been on the call the last couple of weeks, but been busy here at the office. Trying to build a portfolio, working like a dog. I got a couple of other people have been busy as well. Like, for instance, Jean-Marc Landau, Jean Valjean. He gets a high five because he purchased 265 units at $16.7 million. He raised $5 million in 60 days. That property has a monthly cash flow of $49,000. I'm not sure if that's net or after expenses, probably gross. But he raised his money through their local meetup group and partnered with other local syndicators and other students. So he got the money through other deals, but he also has a meetup group. And, I mean, if you're in this business, you might as well get into this business. I used to run a group, not a meetup group, kind of like the meetup groups now, but it was a real estate investment group out of Dedham, Massachusetts, for the sole purpose of, you know, partnering with people to do deals. I'm looking for good deals to do. So I want to give him high five. Yeah! High five to Jean Valjean. I want to welcome new mastery students from Orlando and Phoenix boot camps, both who I saw live in my living room. That was nice. And let's see. That's about what's going on right here. I haven't been on for a little bit, so I'm going to go right into the calls. If you have a question, press star zero for the next hour. We're going to answer as many calls as I can get to. Press star zero. The operator will bring you on the call. I got some questions that were emailed in, so I'm going to take a couple of those while everybody gets all queued up. So I continue to watch the duck boats go by in Boston. Let's see. You know, as Patriots fans, we suffered for years. I mean, we made the playoffs maybe twice when I was a kid, one of them in 86, where we got smoked by the Bears. I mean, was that 86 or 81? I don't know. I can't remember. But we got smoked by the Bears, and another time we got smoked by Oakland. And it wasn't the Super Bowl. It was in the playoffs. We've ever rarely made the playoffs. Actually, the Patriots didn't win. The Red Sox didn't win. It was always wait till next year. The Bruins, they won in the 70s, but they hadn't really won since. And then the Celtics. Oh, we had the Celtics in the 80s, and that was great, the Larry Bird era. And then we just didn't win anything for a long time. And then all of a sudden, the 2000s hit, and boom, Red Sox win a championship, Patriots, Tom Brady. We knew Tom Brady was special because he took over for Bledsoe, and he just started flinging it. He took over during a playoff game, and he just started flinging that ball, and he was making passes, and you could feel the magic. So we were happy to get rid of Bledsoe. That guy just couldn't get the deal done. But so, I mean, we're really enjoying it now. I remember last year, or the year before, that parade that's going on right now, I used to have a place right on Tremont Street, and that parade used to go out in front of it. And I remember going down and reading the sign from this kid that said, "I'm 13 years old and I've seen 11 championships." I thought, "Oh my God, that kid, he doesn't deserve these. All of us that suffered all those years deserve it." All right, so as I digress, here is a question from Zach. Hey, you guys heard of the Zach Brown Band? They're pretty good. Zach Lindemann writes in and he says, "Hey, I had a question on payroll. In the underwriting template, it says that the rule of thumb is 700 to 1,000 a door. I'm seeing the smaller properties, 20 to 60 units, that a broker has sent me running their payroll more than $300 to $500 per door. Is that typical for smaller properties, or should we figure 700 minimum? I would go for the 700 minimum typically. Once you start about 40 to 50 units, I would still go for that 700 minimum. But, you know, here's the thing. It's kind of like a tweener because those properties, there may not be payroll. You know, that just may be the asset management fee. So there may not be any payroll involved because they're so small. You've got to really get to a 50 to 75 unit property before somebody can be placed on the property and be getting payroll. So there's that one. Let's have one from Corintha Caligara. She writes, "Does a holy trinity for multifamily properties apply for commercial properties, or should we be looking for something different? Applies for all properties, all commercial properties, multifamily and office and retail and all of that." All right, I got a bunch of other questions, but let's open up the lines right now and see what's going on. Operator, who's our first caller?
Okay, first question comes from Tom. Tom, please go ahead.
Tom?
Hey, Dave. Tom from Philadelphia. How are you?
Is this Tom Brady?
You've got Tom Brady on the brain. Actually, I'm kind of surprised we had the call today. I figured you guys would all be out partying still.
Just in the crowd. No, see, I used to live in Boston. I used to live right on the parade route, so... You know, I would watch TV until I saw those duck boats make the corner. Then I would go downstairs in the crowd, hoot and holler for like 20 minutes and 25 minutes, and then go back upstairs to my condo.
Nice. Got it down to a science.
It's a lot better than having to park at the T and then drive in. I had to take the T in and stand in the crowd for who knows how long. And so.
Right. Good.
So that's the scoop. Jeff's out there partying. I'm here working.
Yeah, well, congratulations. So my question is along the same lines as the question just read off about smaller properties. I've been looking at 100 to 400 unit properties and made a couple of offers. Nothing's worked out yet, but I had a broker send me a 68 unit deal recently, and the numbers look pretty strong, but I just wanted to get your input on what should I be scrutinizing more closely, or what should I be looking out for that might be different on a 68-unit deal versus something larger?
It's basically the management fees, which we just talked about. All the other rule of thumbs pretty much are in line on that size deal. It's hard to get to be able to afford the management that you need and the maintenance that you need. And a lot of times you're doing a third party or hiring contractors to do it, which is even more expensive. So you got a decision to make. Do I hire somebody part-time, which part-time people tend to come and go? I bite the bullet and try to do it full-time, and the property usually can't afford a full-time maintenance guy or a full-time manager until you get to like 75 units. So that's why they're so difficult. Really, until you get to 150 units, that's when you can really afford everybody that you need on the property. Otherwise, you just need to run it really efficiently.
Yeah, so the advice I've gotten at this point, I've been working with a property manager in my market, Jacksonville, and she actually manages three other properties within a close proximity to the one I'm looking at. Her suggestion was that I have a full-time maintenance person at on-site, and that she could share the leasing agent across the other properties. Does that sound feasible?
Yep, I think so. She must be doing marketing, so all the calls are coming into their office, so they know when the leasing agent needs to be over there. Is it a high traffic area?
It's not on a main road, but it's not too far from kind of all the activity.
like you're going to get a lot of walk-ins? Because you're going to get a lot of walk-ins, and, you know, you can just pretty much set the door up so that if somebody was looking to walk in, you can give them a brochure, or there could even be a phone number on the piece of paper that says call this number, and the maintenance guy can go over there and just at least say hello and take some information and then set up an appointment with a leasing agent.
Okay.
I think that's a good idea.
I'll ask her about that. I think that's and the other question I had on this, on 68 versus the larger units, what are there any considerations in terms of financing that would be different?
Well, you're probably not going to get non-recourse because it's not big enough. Usually they like to see it at actually, how much is the deal? How much is it going to cost?
Purchase price is probably going to be about $3 million.
Oh yeah, you'll get on. They'd like to see it between 1 and 3 million. You got to really shop around for the non-recourse financing. Anything below $1 million, it's more difficult to get non-recourse financing. No, other than the staffing, you know, how are you going to run the staffing? There's not that big of a difference. Just economies of scale, you know, the more units you have on the roof, the easier it is to run it.
Is it a reason to pass on it because it's only 68 units, even though
no,
the other numbers look pretty good? No. Okay.
No, I think that, I mean, don't, definitely not. I mean, we just bought, was it 82 units? I bought 82 or 88 with a student in Huntsville a couple of days ago.
Okay.
So that's under 100. We typically don't like them under 100, but if they got a good story, you know, this one was older. It had a nice repositioning to it. Not a repositioning, just some good value adds to it in terms of increasing the rents, increasing the tenant profile. So, yeah, you know, look at the opportunity in the story, and if it's good, you know, go for it, especially if it's, you know, first deals. I mean, you want to get into a deal as soon as you can. They are going to be, and here's the thing, they're much harder to run. You have to be more efficient, these smaller properties. So, therefore, it makes you a better manager. Either makes you a better manager or kicks you out of the business, one or the other.
Right. Yep. Well, thanks so much. I'll step aside, let someone else jump in.
All right, sounds good. All right, who's next?
Okay, up next we have Dale. Dale, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Dale.
Hi. Yeah, this is Gail down in Clearwater.
Oh, Gail, what's going on down there? Is it warm?
Well, I'm sitting here watching the otters play in the lake, and it's warm. It's about 77 degrees, but we don't have the Patriots here, so we've only got the Bucks.
Well, here's the deal. You can always get satellite TV.
Yep. But the Cormorant's sitting on my dock, and the otters are playing around trying to fight each other for the bacon I put out. So right now, my concern is I'm trying to produce this these executive summary for investors, and I was learning how to produce an annualized return, and on that it requires that I know something about sellers' closing costs, my first question. So I've got two questions regarding this, and the first is sellers' closing costs, the rule of thumb on that, and what factors you have to take into account as far as whether it's the higher percentage or the lower percentage, you know? So can you give me some information on that?
On the seller's closing cost?
Mm-hmm.
So what was the question on the seller's closing cost?
Well, what is the rule of thumb on that? Because I don't recall, and I can't find a reference for it, talking about anything but buyer's closing costs on our immersion or on my mastery program here.
So you're talking about when you're going to resell the property and to figure out what the returns are going to be, and you're going to take into consideration the closing costs?
Yeah.
It's going to cost you to sell it. Typically 3 or 4%. You'd be fine by doing 4%. You know, paying a commission of 3% to resell the property and another 1% for a cost, miscellaneous cost. So you factor you should be safe.
Okay. All right. And then regarding that, usually the broker has given us a 5-year projection or a 20-year projection, which looks a little silly, frankly, but a 5-year projection on this. And so should we use their projections in the market that's there, or should we just go with the 3% income growth and the 2% expense growth?
Three and two, knowing that, you know, if there's a value add, it's going to be a lot better. But if you want to be conservative, just go with the regular 3% increase in income and 2% increase in expenses.
Okay. That's what I was wondering, and that because it's more conservative than they will be, and so you're more likely to be able to do what you say you're going to do. Is that why you're saying that?
Yep.
Yep. Okay. And then the third thing regarding that is I'm calculating two percentages. One is the cash on cash, and the other is the annualized return. Are those numbers meant to then be combined for a total return, or is the annualized return including that?
The annualized return is a combination of the cash on cash return plus the disposition return when you resell it. Those two combined make up the annualized return divided by the number of years that you own the property.
Mm-hmm.
That's the annualized return. So you got your cash on cash return, which is your yearly return that the investors are making on the money invested. Then you get the sale of the property, which is the disposition, and you make you bought it for X amount, you sold it for X amount, so that's a percentage return. You add them all together. Let's say if you held it for 4 years, then you divide by 4 years, four, and then that gives you your annualized return.
Oh, okay. So if I had, let's say I held it for 5 years and had a 40% cash-on-cash return because of the yearly return, would I divide that then by 5 and come back to my 8% and add that to the disposition return? Or just kind of, I've got these two percentages and I'm trying to figure out how they combine or don't.
All right. So the cash on cash return doesn't combine with the annualized return. It's part of the equation to create the annualized return.
Okay.
So it's the cash on cash return plus the return that you get for selling the property divided by the number of years that you held it. And that equals the annualized return.
Okay. All right then. I got that.
All right.
Hope to see you soon.
Come see me. Come see me during business building.
I'm going to wait till summer when it hits 95 here, and I'm going to come up to Boston.
Okay. You do that. It's nice up here in the summertime.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you soon.
Great.
Bye. All right. Who's next?
Okay. Up next we have Kashif. Kashif, please go ahead.
Dave from the North Dallas area.
I'm having a hard time hearing you with your phone. Are you on speakerphone?
No, I'm not on speakerphone. Let me turn my Bluetooth off and see if that makes it any better. Is this any better?
Yeah.
Hello.
Better.
Is this any better?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm from the Dallas area, and congratulations on the big win. I'm a lifelong Chicago Bears fan. But I definitely have a lot of admiration for the Patriots as well as Tom Brady. So that's
did
huge.
Did you see the game
and,
with the fridge?
Yeah.
Did you see the game with the fridge?
Yes.
The last touchdown, they beat us 45.
I did.
I'm still
pissed yeah, that was a great moment for us.
They should have given it to Peyton Manning. I mean, they should have given it to
Walter Payton.
Walter
Payton.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Hey, I've got two questions. First of all, I'm a little bit of a new student, as you may know. So, first of all, in the Dallas area, I have some of you.
Wait, there's a problem. There's a problem with the phone. I'm not sure what it is. You're kind of like going in and out. So, you sounded stronger a little bit until you went into the question. Now I can't understand the question.
Sure. Can you hear me? Okay. Can you hear me a little better?
Now I can. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I have a. I have another student who reached out to me about a deal in Houston, Texas. I've heard about zoning restrictions. If you can give me any guidance if that's a good place to invest in right now. And question number two, I've also heard that Texas, being a hot state, where maybe, you know, there may be only be pocket opportunities. So if for somebody like me, if not Texas, what other place may be a good place to invest in their state or city?
I'm not crazy about Houston right now because I think it's past its peak. And it doesn't have zoning, so therefore, if you're not from the area, you really need to be with somebody you trust from the area that knows the area because of the lack of zoning, there's good properties and bad properties right next to each other, and you don't even know it. They'll have neighborhoods that are stigmatized that look good, but you won't even know it. So I don't really like Houston right now, but I do like Dallas and the Metroplex. I think, you know, it's still a great area to be investing, even though it's been going on for so long. They still keep creating jobs there. If not Dallas, I would look at these secondary markets that are kind of older, that were the last to really move in this cycle. And those are markets like Cincinnati and St. Louis. There's talk that Toledo, Ohio is actually starting to move, which I was really surprised about. Akron and Dayton, Ohio. Ohio seems to be really making some noise right now. So those are the markets, that Des Moines, Iowa. Iowa? No, not Des Moines. Boise.
Cedar Rapids, or?
I'm not familiar with Cedar Rapids. I don't know what they're doing. But even Kansas City would be a good market right now.
Yeah, have somebody reach out to me about something. One last question on the Dallas market. So I've talked to a couple of the commercial mortgage brokers, and what I've kind of gotten back from them a little bit is that in the Holy Trinity framework, the cap rate, they've told me it's going to be difficult to find something with like 8% and all. But should we still be looking at, still be sticking in the Holy Trinity, in other words, it still needs to fit in for the Dallas market?
You definitely do. You use the Holy Trinity in every market. You don't change it.
Okay.
That's a good concept of investing. Yeah, once you start changing it and going lower on the cap rate or cash on cash return, you start getting in trouble.
Got it. Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay, appreciate it. I'll hang up. Thank you.
All right, who's next on the Wisecracker line?
Okay, up next we have Andy. Andy, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave. This is Andy from Phoenix. I have a list of apartment owners and information from CoStar, and these are smaller properties, and I just wanted to start calling them out of the blue. What would you say to them?
If you want to start calling smaller properties?
Yes, just talking directly with the owners that I have from CoStar.
I would come right out and say that you're an investor looking to invest in their area, and are you interested in selling?
Okay.
I mean, I think that would be the opening line.
All right.
Then they would probably say, how much are you offering? And then you say, you want to find out what the motivation is, but if you cold call them blue like that, I mean, you can do that. I know some people that have done it and they're successful. It's a harder game to play. I would much rather maybe send them direct mail and see if they'll raise their hand and tell me that they're interested in selling than spending all my time on the phone, you know, cold calling people and either getting no's or, you know, I don't know what the numbers are for selling a property, but I do know what they are for listing a property. For sale, and these are for a single family. And the reason I know this is because I had a real estate brokerage company over in Brockton, and like you guys are doing, I was trained by people that knew what they were doing when I first opened up that business because I wanted that business to succeed. And there was a guy by the name of Floyd Wickman that basically said, all sales is a numbers game, and basically life is all sales, but all sales is a numbers game. And when you're doing, when you're cold calling for listings, it takes 75 calls to get a yes, a listing appointment. It takes 3 listing appointments to get a listing. So therefore, if you want to get a listing, then you need to do 225 cold calls.
Wow.
And he was right. We ran off those numbers, and I used to train people off those numbers, and you know they pretty much hit what he was saying. So I'm not sure what it is for, you know, people to sell their properties, their commercial properties, but I can tell you this, you know, it's a lot of time. I think if you send out that direct mail piece and you also spent that time creating relationships with people that control listings, I think you'd be much better served because you would get more and more deals coming in. from your initial work. Yeah, the thing with cold calling is you have to keep doing it over and over and over and over again, you know, to keep getting deals. So if you get a good couple of good relationships under your belt with people that will bring you good listings, good pocket listings, it's a much easier life. But I'm not saying don't do it, because you do anything you can to get started. And then once you get started, you can start picking and choosing what you're going to continue to do.
Okay.
Sound good?
Great. Sounds good.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you.
All right. Who's next?
Okay. Up next, we have Joe. Joe, please go ahead.
Dave, hey, this is Joe Parator in Virginia. How are you?
Hey, Joe. What's going on there in Virginia?
Hey, big Pats game is what I can't believe you watched that by yourself Sunday night, man. We were going nuts around here. My son kept on – I was at halftime going, oh, man, look at Brady. I've never seen him sweat before. I've never seen fear in his eyes. And my son kept on saying, Dad, don't worry. He, you know, there's a lot of game left and a lot can happen. So the Pats aren't out of it.
He was just getting focused. That was focused.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
But no, everybody ate their food, and then at halftime they all went home.
I can't believe that. That's
actually. Yeah. Like me and my brother Jeff, the diehard fans. Jeff was in Boston. They went to see Paul Pierce's last game in Boston Garden, and then after that they stayed in there and watched the game with all the other crazies.
Yeah. Yeah. You gotta stick with it, because anything can happen. And man, that was the best Super Bowl of all time.
I mean, if that game wasn't an analogy of life, I don't know what is. I mean, you can be you can be way, way down and look like there's no return, but, you know, you just keep plugging away. You know, they played situational offense and situational defense. You know, they looked like what they needed to – they did what they needed to do in that particular situation that they were faced with in order to be successful, and they were just playing it play by play. I mean, if you're down in life, you got to do the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. They kept on talking about how no team had ever come back from more than a 10-point deficit, and they were down 25 points.
Yeah,
and,
I know they said, you know, when they started talking about the 2-touchdown deficit, no team's ever come back, and I was like, oh, no, that's not going to be a problem. They'll come back from that. And then one of my friends that was there at the time said, oh, he said the reason they've never come back from 2-touchdown deficit in the Super Bowl is because of the quality of the teams. You know, there's always a high-quality team on the other side. I'm like, Patriots will come back from that. But when it hit 25, you know, I'll be honest with you, in the third quarter and they kicked that field goal, I wasn't feeling too good. But you know what? Every Super Bowl the Patriots have won, it's been a nail-biter. You know, it hasn't been a great game to watch if you're a Patriots fan. You know, the ending always came out good, except for the two Giants games. The ending always came out good. But the game itself were not enjoyable. It was like nail biting the whole way, anxiety the whole way. We thought that. I know we were talking to friends. It was like, if we could just have a blowout, you know, just have a blowout and enjoy the whole entire game. And then there was a blowout, but it was the other side. Nobody expected that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy. Just crazy. But anyway, hey, listen, I'm analyzing a 200 unit place, and I'm looking at the rent rolls, and specifically the move-in dates on them. I'm curious as what a good percentage is for recent move-ins. And out of these 200 units, 25% of them have been of the leases have been signed within the past 6 months, and 99 out of 200 have been signed in the past 12 months. So basically 50% have been signed this past year. I don't know if that's normal or if the the owner
the typical churn on an apartment complex is it's actually about 60%, you know, 60% new leases each year. If you can get it down to 40%, that's really good. That's called closing the back door. The if you're concerned about the 25% in the last 90 days or so, you know, that's high. I wonder what they were doing to bring those people in. So what I would do during due diligence is I would take a look at all of those leases, and I would take a look at, you know, all the backup they have, the employment history, the credit report, and all that stuff, and make sure it's all there. And if it's not there, you know, then be concerned, because they leased it up to sell it, and those people might be, you know, in the process of being evicted over the next couple of months because their qualifications weren't that great.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if it's if the 40% or less is of the leases were signed more than 12 months ago, that's excellent. And 60% is normal, or you want you don't want more.
You don't want what?
What's that?
You
don't want to see more than 60% of the leases signed within the past 12 months. Is that right?
Well, normal turnover is 60%. If it's higher than that, then you know you just ask questions as to why. How come you turn over your unit so much? That's actually a value add too. I mean, if they're turning over so many, you can stabilize that tenant turn. You're going to reduce your expenses. If you're buying based on actuals, so you're paying a lot less, and you fix the turn, and all of a sudden now you get some great cash flow.
Okay. All right. Excellent. Well, that's all I have. I have to go back to celebrating the Pats win. So.
Yeah, man. They're at City Hall right now, holding up all 5 Super Bowl trophies. Bill Belichick's at the mic.
Well, hey, I had to look up Tom Brady's diet yesterday after that guy looks like he's more like he's 29 than 39. And have you ever seen what he eats on a daily basis? Him and Giselle? Oh, I just Google Tom Brady's diet, and there's a ton of stuff on the internet.
There are so many anti-aging and reverse aging supplements and drugs out there for not only your brain but your body. If you can survive the next 10 years, you'll be able to survive until you're 120. You know, if anybody's interested in that, just go on to TED Talks. YouTube. Go on to YouTube TED Talks and put in either anti-aging or reverse aging and listen to what those people have to say. It's just incredible. That's what Tom Brady's doing. He's taking all that stuff. I don't blame him. Mm. I take a bunch of that stuff too. I take nootropics and, I have my blood tested every 6 months and see what I'm deficient at. And then I don't like to call him an anti-aging doctor, but it's like a preservation doctor. And find out what I'm deficient in, and then he creates a supplement plan that that brings me back up. I feel great.
Well, do you watch? I take it you watch what you eat too. I mean, you look like you're in great shape. So
yeah, I watch what I eat, but I have a problem with sugar. I love eating sugar. If I could not eat sugar, I would be like unbelievably in shape. But I can't help it. I love to bake, and I love to eat what I bake.
Yeah.
Taught me how.
Yeah.
But other than that, I like to stay in shape. I want to drop dead. I don't want to die of something that's going to kill me over like 5 years.
Yeah.
I want to drop dead at 110. Still be dancing. 110 looks like I'm 40.
Well, good luck with that. You look like you're in good enough shape that could happen. And
I'm determined.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll check out those TED Talks.
Yeah, check it out. It's very, very interesting stuff. It's unbelievable what they're coming up with now.
All right.
All right.
Okay.
Nice.
All right, Dave. Thanks. Take care.
All right. Who's next as Tom Brady takes a stand out there in front of City Hall? Roger that.
Okay. Up next we have Alicia. Alicia, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, Alicia.
How are you doing? Good?
I'm doing pretty good.
I have a quick question. What I hope is a quick question. I've got a piece of property that is sitting on a border town, and their main source.
Border town of Mexico.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, down in Brownsville. And the main
source. Oh, I used to own in Brownsville.
What's that?
I used to own in Brownsville.
Did you? Well,
yeah, I used to own La Residencia. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It looks like a pretty good piece. I haven't analyzed it all the way, but what has me thinking is that they mainly survive off of NAFTA. And Trump is talking about renegotiating NAFTA.
Yeah.
So I'm really concerned that I get stuck with this piece of property. Because otherwise
it would be a concern, but Brownsville is a medical hub for the region. It's a retail hub for the region. I like those two things about Brownsville when I own there. There's a huge amount of trade that does go on with Mexico, but even without NAFTA, I think that trade would still exist because people go to and from the border. Mexicans come over to shop in the U.S. and vice versa.
But he's closing.
Ronzo's got a lot going for it. Pardon me?
But Trump is doing a lot of stuff with that. I mean, with the illegals coming over here and all that sort of thing.
I'm not talking about the illegals. I'm talking about the legals.
The legals go back and forth. But isn't
oh, yeah.
I'm just concerned. I'm concerned that you don't think there's a threat there?
There's risk in everything we do. Is there a threat that because Trump will keep the illegals out that there won't be tenants in our apartments? Sure, that risk is there. Will that wall ever get built? I doubt that.
I don't think that's going to happen either. But so, in your opinion, would this be something you'd be interested in? If this
I'd
were
still
you,
buy in Bronxville. Yep.
Yeah, you would. Okay. Okay.
Yep.
That's because it looks like a pretty good deal. And
yeah.
I'm just like, do I don't? Yeah. So, okay. That's hoping to be a quick question.
Good luck. Let me know how you make out.
All right. Okay. Bye.
Bye. By the way, one of the things that you could take right now that's over the counter on Amazon, and it was created by a Harvard medical doctor, and he's a researcher at Harvard as well, is the supplement called resveratrol. You can get it on Amazon, I think I said that. It's called resveratrol. Basically, it's that ingredient in red wine, you know, that if you had enough of it, it would keep you younger, and you'd have to drink like 1,000 glasses a day in order to get it. Well, there's a local TV station or show called Chronicle here, and it's all about local stuff. And it talked about this guy inventing this. Must have been about like 5 years ago. And his mother was the longest surviving lung cancer patient ever. She survived for like 22 years. And he maintains that she survived because he had her on resveratrol the entire time. And supposedly it regenerates your genes. So you take a couple of those in the morning, you know, and as far as I know, there's no side effects. And, you know, it's one more thing that you can do to potentially keep yourself younger. But there's a lot of great stuff out there now. He was just on he's on a TED Talk, actually, talking about resveratrol and talking about how people debunked him and, you know, said that things didn't work, and then he had to rethink his philosophies, and then he started talking about all the stuff that's coming that's so much more powerful than resveratrol. So, but let's go back to real estate. Who's next?
Okay, up next we have Anita. Anita, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave. Congratulations. It was a fun game, the most boring game I've watched, but had a fantastic finish. So
absolutely.
I didn't realize all of them had been that. But it does, you know, you have no idea how many times I think of the story you told about you guys doing the marathon and your brother wanting to give up and kept going. So that was, this is just another lesson. And no matter how far you get down, just keep going because you never know. You keep trying and what will happen. So I've got couple of questions. I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. Just take one more step.
There you go. The RE indicator, back at UP8, they were saying that it would be ready to show upcoming emerging areas, and I haven't heard anything about that or gotten any updates. Is that what happened with that?
Scott's in the middle right now. We've got to change over servers. So we're changing over servers, and as soon as we get that done, then he's got the next upgrade halfway done. So
okay, so it'll be a few months out still.
That's going to be released, yeah.
Okay. So looking at properties, when you're looking at the current, management and maintenance numbers, and they are way below what your rule of thumb is on your underwriting template, I guess when you underwrite it, the lenders want to see their rule of thumb, which I would guess would follow your rule of thumb. But even if you're going to use, like this particular property has a part-time manager working 4 days a week, and he would probably be willing to stay on. And then the maintenance tech gets concession for his apartment, and so he works full-time in maintenance, landscaping, and all of that. But it, given that, it is far below your template for management and contract services. So how do you, I mean, what do you do with that? Because, I mean, I know you want to write conservatively, but it kind of skews the numbers out of the Holy Trinity when if you can keep them, keep what's going there and it's a, you know, it's a lower cost of living area. How do you approach that?
You got to bring it up. You got to bring it up to the rule of thumb. If it's less than the rule of thumb, something's not happening typically. So you got to bring it up into the margins of the rule of thumb because these properties run by those rules of thumb.
Yeah, but if they're currently running, I mean, this is a owner-run property. He hasn't paid any attention to it in several years. He's got, you know, several other interests. So it is running on those numbers now. So there'd be no reason, unless you did bring in another property management firm, to raise them. So.
Yeah, there is a reason. Something's not happening. These properties can't run for below, typically for below those rules of thumb. If you think you might be in an area where it can, the thing to do then is to contact a local lender and ask them what the rule of thumb for that particular area, because those rules of thumb are nationwide. But you can get right down into the nitty gritty. You go to a local commercial lender and say, hey, how much does it cost to operate a multifamily property? What do you use for rules of thumb? You know, for the different categories of expenses, and they'll tell you. And if it's below that,
okay,
you know, they're not, something's not getting done. And what that means is there's bigger expenses or, you know, costs that are going to be incurred later down the road.
Okay. And so in addition to that, so this guy, the rents are probably 20% under market rents here. So when you go into a property, how do you figure out what you're going to be your best ROI for micro repositioning? How do you determine that? Is there a rule of thumb for that, or you just go in and say, well, here's the least I could do, here's the middle I could do, what the rent rate would be for each option?
Well, you got to take a take off of what it's going to cost you to do the repairs that you're going to do, and then you're going to take a look at what the market rents are now for like kind apartments. And then, you know, that's going to be your rental increase over the next year for any that's your loss to lease for any unit that's below that. Once you get the rehab done, you can bring those rents up to market. And then, you know, based on that's your new income level, and based on that, you'll be able to determine what the value of the property is going to be.
Okay. And so when you get into one of these things, I guess you just go in with the assumption and with your investors of saying, well, the first year we're going to be repositioning and raising rents as we go, so the return won't be as great the first year, but years 2 through 5, here's what you're going to see.
Well, you should really buy it based on the actual numbers today and get the returns at 8% or better for the investor. It's really hard to sell a deal that has low returns the first year for higher returns second and third year. I found that
interesting. Okay, but if you can get a cash on cash of 10% the first year, that you'd be able to run with that?
Oh yeah, that's great. Oh, cash on cash instead of a 12, you mean? That would bring your investor would get like 6%. That's a hard one to sell.
Okay.
It's just a hard one to sell into, but you could do it, but it's need a lot more people to present to.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. All right, who's next on the Wisecracker line?
Okay, up next we have Roger. Roger, please go ahead.
Hey, Dave, congrats on the pass. Maybe
right
next
on, man.
Year it'll be the Dallas Cowboys and the Patriots. Should have been this
That'd
year,
be good.
But didn't quite happen.
Yeah, I look forward to that.
I'm a Dallas fan. Just a little brainstorming here. We've been looking at something. I don't have it under contract, so I'm going to be a little vague. Over 100 units, definitely a C- in an A area. Needs to have a lot done to it. So just wondering if you had some words of wisdom or suggestions. If we borrow the money, interest only for a couple years, it's kind of it's not making any money. But that's kind of what I'm thinking. I owe for a couple years and rehab it, and then try and put the long-term debt on
What's
it
the
after 2 years.
Right now?
Well, it's 92%, but most of them haven't paid a security deposit, so we think they've just kind of filled it up. It's badly, very badly managed. So the owner got into trouble in the downturn. He signed some deal with a management company. They also have equity, so they have control. So he can't. The only way he can get rid of them is to actually sell it. So it's really had no maintenance for, I don't know, 10 years, basically. Bad shape, but a great area.
I would be concerned about the fact that they did lease it up like that. What was the occupancy last year? Did you have the profit and loss for the last 2 years?
No, we have very poor financials, which I think is by intent. I have a T12 that ends last August.
Well, it's going to be a difficult deal to do. Probably you can't rely on your numbers. If it's in an A area, that's a plus.
Yep. It's in an A area. It's on the water. It's got lots of pluses. Almost a teardown.
I would take a look at all those leases and figure out how big of a turn you're going to have. Do the break-even analysis. Go into the Mastery website and get the break-even analysis out of there.
Okay.
That's how you want to determine, you know, how you're going to, how long it's going to take, how much cash you're going to need to get to see this thing through.
Okay. Good point. Thank you.
Right on, man.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. All right, who's next?
Okay, up next we have Paul. Paul, please go ahead.
Hey, Dave, how are you?
Hey, Paul, what's going on?
How's everything? Congrats on your Pats.
Yeah, man, everything's good.
What a comeback. Amazing.
Yeah.
We're suffering Jet
like
fans
that,
down
man.
Here, so you can imagine how
fans?
Difficult it was to watch that.
I'll bet.
Oh, man. But you got to give those guys credit, man. They came back from a long way back.
Yeah.
Anyway, happy to report that Lisa Schmidt and I inked our first deal this week. We're in contract on a smaller deal, 45-unit deal in Montgomery, Alabama. But it's
nice.
A start for us, which is great.
Yeah. I mean, for some people, 45 units is huge. You know? It's all relevant.
Yeah. Yeah, we're happy with it. We're happy with it.
Yeah.
And
the
question that we had is that, you know, we're going through the acquisition process now. And we're looking for a timeline of some sort. We have the acquisition process off of the Mastery website, but it doesn't really have a specific timeline other than to say, you know, feasibility period 30 days and then 30 to 45 days from closing and then 1 to 3 days from closing. But it doesn't have a more specific timeline. Do you have anything, or you guys have anything on the website that has a more specific timeline and checklist for us to follow?
In terms of, in terms of the due diligence process, the due diligence checklist that's in the manual, all that needs to get done within 30 days.
We have that.
The timeline
yeah.
that you're looking at is the takeover timeline. So that's the timeline to take over a property and different things that need to get done there. But you're talking about deal timeline, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
How far out, you know, from closing should we be starting certain tasks?
That's not the case. It's you got to take a look at your when the effective date is, knowing that you have 30 days to do due diligence. Knowing that you've got to get your financials done immediately as soon as possible because that's the first step. Do you want the boot camp?
Yeah. Well, we're in good shape there. We have 45 and 45. That's in our contract.
That's really good. If you want the boot camp, you know, the it takes you through the process. Look at your notes from the very first half day, and it takes you through the process of doing a deal. And that's really there's not a timeline there, but that's when things happen and why they happen. That particular time. So the most important thing is to get the financials as soon as possible because that's the first hurdle to overcome. Nothing really you can do after that because if the financials don't work out, there's no sense spending any other money.
Right.
So you do that, and then you immediately go into purchase and sale, finish off that purchase and sale with the attorney and get the physical due diligence done. It's all about getting your due diligences done, and that's what all those
we just signed the contract, so we're in contract now. And the effective date will start as soon as we get our last piece of due diligence that we requested. And we're expecting that to
be
one day this week.
Yeah.
So, and then we'll have 45 days to do our diligence, and you know we have our you know financial contingency as well. So, I think we're in good shape. So there's really no checklist available, huh?
No. Just the checklist is the due diligence checklist.
Okay.
In the manual, they don't have times next to them though. But compare that with the process that we go over the first couple hours in boot camp, and that's your answer.
All right, good. We'll do that. Hey, getting back to eating healthy and taking supplements. Lisa and I hooked up with this integrative medicine guy out of Dallas, Texas, that we came in contact with, and he's got us both on supplements. So we're doing the supplement thing too. That you know, anti-aging stuff.
What's his name?
So his name?
Yeah.
Dr. Light, Kevin Light.
That's who I go to.
Oh, it is. Okay.
That guy's awesome.
He is.
Yeah. He's really good.
Yep.
He knows the stuff.
That's who we're using. So we've been with him since about last October, about a year ago October. So it's been a little over a year now.
He's about the same.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool. Well, anyway, that's the latest from us.
Okay. Good luck
out
there.
Thanks
a
lot. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yep. All right, who's next? Got a couple time for a couple more calls.
Okay, up next we have Stephanie. Stephanie, please go ahead.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm really good.
I am, too. You know, I've been in the wilderness. I live in New York now, so it's definitely a fair being a Pats fan. But finally, my son and my faith was vindicated, so we felt really good this weekend.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, actually, one question about... besides jealousy?
You know what the real problem in New York is?
No, what?
New Yorkers. I'm only kidding. I'm only kidding about New Yorkers out there. Somebody get that joke. That was really funny. That's the only reason I repeat that.
It's brutal out here.
Times.
Yeah,
you know, there was
brutal.
One time when the Red Sox were losing so many times. It was just heartbreaking. And I thought, you know, I'm going to be a Yankees fan.
Oh, I know.
Winners. I went to New York and I bought a Yankees cap and I put it on my head and it was like this burning hole in my head. I had to take it off. You know, I couldn't help it, but that's just a rivalry. It's a good, healthy rivalry between Boston and New York.
And my grandfather was a Red Sox fan, and for about 45 years until, you know, they won in, I don't know, it was 2000 or whatever, and I was afraid he was going to pass away before they won, but he made it. So happy for him. Exactly.
Yeah. They did two more times. It's incredible.
Yeah, exactly. He lived through all of them, so that was vindication for him as well. So, Dave, I was calling because I was shown an off-market property in one of the emerging markets that we've discussed, and it's 100-plus units, but it's a C property in a C market. And I want to know, is there ever a time that it doesn't make sense to look at doing a value add on a C property, you know, if it's in a marginal market,
area,
is that sometimes
you don't want to do a C property in a C area? You don't do a value add. Oh,
you
value
do not.
I'm talking about a repositioning. No, I mean, anytime there's an opportunity for value add, do it. Right.
Okay.
If it's legitimate, I mean, you got to do your due diligence to make sure that you can really raise the rent as high as you think you can, or you know, if the occupancy is low, that the occupancy will increase.
Mm-hmm.
But value add your opportunities.
Okay. And then, so my focus really has been on sort of like stabilized properties with maybe a modest value add component. So I have not spent a lot of time understanding how you would estimate the costs associated with doing those renovations. Are there general rules of thumb that you could give me to allow me to determine what the right price is for the deal without going through the process of having the inspection at this point or the stage of the process?
So say that. I'm sorry. Say that again.
Oh, okay. Sorry. No, I was simply saying that this property needs some work, and so I wanted to know, is there a way for me, or are there any rules of thumb that I can use to estimate what those costs are going to be without going through the process of hiring an inspector at this stage of the process?
Bring a contractor over there. Or get half the brokers, which they'll probably be low, but bring a contractor over, one or the other. That's how you do it.
Okay. Okay, so you really should have someone experienced sort of take a walk through to help you estimate what the costs are going to be.
I would.
Okay, I see. Okay, great. That's helpful.
Have you been to immersion training?
Yeah, I went to immersion in Atlanta, but we didn't talk about...
Rehab?
Rehab.
Hey, I'm sorry. That's going to the Mastery website, the repositioning. We did a repositioning boot camp, which isn't available to anybody except for Mastery students. We never sold it. We did it. We recorded the entire thing. And that will give you an idea of what everything costs on an upgrade.
Oh, I understand. Okay, great. And then, I'm sorry, could you give me the name of the doctor? You said Dr. Kevin Light, as in L-I-G-H-T?
Kevin Light. L-I-G-H-T, yeah.
Okay. Okay, wonderful. In Texas. In Dallas?
Yeah, Dallas. Yep.
Fabulous. Okay, great. Thanks so much, Dave.
All right.
Bye.
We have time for one more. Who's it going to be?
We have no further questions at the moment.
Oh, no further questions. All right, then let's see. I do have... couple of minutes. I do have a couple of questions, so I'm going to go through those. And let me see. The first one is someone who's living in the San Francisco Bay Area, Joshua Erickson, says the price of real estate are really high. Since I've been using investors in my deals, should I look for properties outside the Bay Area where prices are lower and I can get more for my investors, or should I stay in the Bay Area or just buy smaller properties? The answer to that question is the return that you can get, not the price of the property, but the return that you can get on your investment. So if you can get pocket listings in the Bay Area and get a great return, I mean, good, do it. Doesn't matter what size they are. But you go right across the bridge to Oakland, and Oakland is an area that's been moving, doing well. You know, you want to buy in the good areas in Oakland, but it's not far, not far. All right, let's see. Jose Rivera writes in, says – he found a 300-unit property in an emerging market, which is currently being sold for $5.2 million, but it's empty. What are the pros and cons of acquiring a property like that, and when is it a good deal, when is it not a good deal? Is it worth getting more information for me being a new investor, or is it suited for seasoned investors? I'll tell you what, that 300-unit property, there's got to be a reason why it's empty, and you don't want a 300-unit property that's empty. You don't even want a 100-unit property that's empty or a 50-unit property that's empty. If you're going to buy an empty property, stick to a 3 to a 6 to a 10 unit, you know, where it's manageable. Those other properties, especially if you're new, if you've got experience doing that, good. But if you're new, it's just you will lose big time. There's so many things you don't know about redoing one of these properties that you don't even want to get involved. Take it from somebody that has a lot of experience, you know, going in over his head, and from students that have done this, you know, after I've told them not to, and their horror stories. Suzanne Fortune writes in, what source do you use to check market rent? I go to the, I ask the management company, you know, who my competition is, and then I go to those, I either call or I visit those properties and find out what they're getting for the rent. That's how I find out. Vanessa Ignacio from San Diego writes in, if I can't find a property that's in the Holy Trinity, what are some of the value plays to look for to determine if it could be a good deal? Well, the common value plays are low rent, low occupancies, higher than average expenses, but even then you want it within the Holy Trinity unless it's a repositioning, then it's not going to be in the Trinity. But we want a value add that's in the Trinity. That's what makes it such a good deal, not I'm going to do a value add so I can meet the Trinity after year one. That's a bad way to invest. All right. So your homework for this week is the homework that we always do, and that is to go out and get yourself make two offers, and also get yourself into two networking situations, because it's as simple as two and two. If you put in two offers, they don't have to be good deals. You just want to get involved, you know, get in the game, start talking to a broker, start a relationship. And two networking situations so you can get people on your list and get comfortable with telling people what you do. Not asking for money. We never ask for money. But we tell people what we do, and we find out who's interested. And if they're interested, you know, and they might want to do something in the future, they go on the list, and we start communicating. So two and two, And I will see you in 2 weeks. Jeannie will see you next week, I believe. I believe it's a Let's Grill Jeannie. I'm not sure. But I'll see you in 2 weeks in another one of these calls. All right. Have a good 2 weeks, everybody. Talk to you soon.